Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? You get what you need.
You know, I have to tell
Carol,
you,
the Coach,
it is so important to not only want to change something about yourself, but to create the recovery tools to make that happen. And I'm Carol the Coach, a.k.a. Carol Jorgensen-Sheath, and I'm so glad to be with you today. After, gosh, a whole week off from vacation, we played a very popular show last weekend about partners and their strength, hope, and recovery. And tonight I'm going to be thrilled to be talking to the guru, the founder, the master of sexual addiction. I mean, this is a man who has put his whole life into sexual addiction recovery, and you've heard me talk about him before. There's no doubt about it that he has influenced me. I took the training. I became a certified sexual addictions therapy through his institute. Dr. Patrick Carnes, all of you know that he's a nationally known speaker and writer on sex addiction and recovery issues. He's the founder of the school that I attended, the International Institute for Trauma and Addiction Professionals, and he's the founder of Gentle Path Press, probably the most phenomenal publishing company regarding sexual addiction. I tell you, the folks there are stellar, and I just so appreciate being associated with this group of people. And I'll tell you, tonight's meeting of the minds, he and I, we're going to be talking about how sexual addiction has changed in the last 30, 40 years, and what he's most excited about in terms of treatment and recovery and brain science and all the things that are really contributing to healthy recovery for the sex addicts that we work with and their partners. And this would not have happened had it not been for AFAR, which is a group of people devoted to research with sexual addiction. And I'm excited because I'm going to be compiling a book of these radio shows, transcripts, and we're going to put that together. Dr. Carnes is going to be the first story. And then we're going to sell it to you as an ebook for $9.99. There are going to be anywhere from 30 to 40 shows in this book with the experts in the field, and you're going to be able to learn about eroticized rage, codependency, partner trauma, complex trauma, enmeshed relationships with family members, you know, things that really may have contributed to your sexual addiction and the trauma underneath that. So that is something that we're going to have out by the end of the summer. All the proceeds are going to AFAR because this research is so very important. Important in substantiating the work we're doing, important in helping sex addicts and their partners get healthy, and in helping other people understand that this is a real disorder. So I am thrilled to be talking with him tonight. You know, I can't remember how many books he's written. I hope that he can share with us how many books he's written. But I've read them all. And the Institute offers so many incredible opportunities for learning. So we'll have Dr. Patrick Carnes on at about 9:15 Eastern Standard Time. And I really did miss you last week, I have to say. You know, I got a lot of emails saying, have a great vacation. You know, one of the things that I know is that part of true healthy recovery is forming relationships. And this show is the only show currently on iTunes that deals with sexual addiction. I have over 192,000 open downloads a week. And it's worldwide. It means people all over the world are listening and wanting to get more information about this. You know, I was telling my group tonight, as we were ending, I said, now, you guys, if you're not doing anything, you might just listen to my interview with Dr. Patrick Carnes. You know, it's like I was so excited. And they giggled because I'm telling you, they go different places to different treatment centers and, of course, attend 12-step meetings in other cities, other states, and other countries. And when people find out that they're from Indianapolis, they go, oh, my gosh, do you know Carol the Coach? And that is the beauty of media and radio. And what I know to be true is that there used to be so much stigma to talking about this kind of stuff. And anymore, people are hungry for the information. They want to get help. I had a young man call me today, and he's not able to drive. He had difficulty speaking, and he was talking about chronic masturbation. And he said, I cannot stop, and I don't know what to do. And, of course, I said, get yourself to a 12-step meeting. And that's when I found out he couldn't drive. And I said, you know what? There are telephone meetings day and night that you can be a part of. But I do want him to do some face-to-face. I can tell that this man is incredibly lonely and is probably using chronic masturbation as a way of medication. And so I said, you know, what I would initially do is I would go to sexhelp.com. I'd put in your zip code. I'd find a qualified, certified sexual addictions therapist. This man that was calling me was from another state. He'd actually Googled me and the show and listened to a few podcasts and was really interested in figuring out how he could connect. And, you know, what I know to be true about sexual addiction is that whether you had trauma that contributed to the sexual addiction, or you have trauma now as a result of the sexual addiction, it is so imperative that you work on a recovery program that activates behavioral patterns that are healthy, that work through the grief, the loneliness, the sadness, the anger, the rage, and that connect you to other people who are going through the same thing. That's why we really believe in certified sexual addiction therapists, because this is a niche. It's not a one treatment that takes care of all the issues. There are people that really do have expertise in trauma, people that have expertise in trauma reenactment, people that have expertise in 12-step programs, people that have expertise in ministry and recovery. You know, you need to assess what it is you need, but you need to go to the experts. That's what this show's all about, and that's what a certified sexual addiction therapist can provide you. So again, you can go to that website. It is www.sexhelp.com. Click on the Find a Therapist tab, put in your zip code, and find the closest CSAT, or look for somebody who works through Skype or through coaching. Now, I started my group therapy as a result of talking with Dr. Carnes. You know, he had said that it was imperative that in recovery you work with a certified therapist who has sexual addiction recovery background or has been trained. You provide group therapy because, again, it's a different type of experience than a 12-step model. You know, there is crosstalk. They each help each other work through issues. You know, I do something called Mount Vesuvius, and that's where the men in my group go through an anger exercise where they get to rage at their perpetrator or their neglectful mother or father. And they use each other as a container for safety, because when you're going to do this kind of work, you got to be safe. There has to be safety and there has to be containment. And that's so important for any kind of trauma work. And so the group provides that opportunity. So if you are wanting a group therapy experience, you know, when you scroll down looking for a CSAT in your area, see who provides groups, because they're very, very helpful. And, of course, we know 12-step meetings are helpful. You know, you've heard me talk before about Recovery Nation and some of the online recovery groups. They're wonderful, too, especially for people that really have difficulty with the 12-step program at the same time. You'll have to have that spiritual transformation on some level. It's not about conforming. It's about transforming, and that's so important. So, the group teaches me as much as I work with them. Tonight we were talking about eroticized rage, and it's interesting because I'm going to ask Dr. Carnes about his definition of eroticized rage. People really don't understand that. It's a tough concept. And so we're going to talk to him about that. We're going to talk with him about what recovery tools he thinks are the most important. And, of course, so many sex addicts struggle with long-term recovery. And we know that if they work on the recovery toolkit, if they participate in all the recovery tools, they're going to be much more likely to maintain successful recovery. And that's what it's all about. You've heard me say before, I work with a lot of sex addicts, but in my own personal life, I'm around a lot of recovery. And I wouldn't trade that for the world, because people who are in recovery are always working on themselves. And that is what counts first and foremost, is that need to increase self-esteem and improve one's life. Not only do I get up in the morning and exercise, but I listen to podcasts that provide inspiration and education. I spend time reading, and I have a solid fellowship of people in my life that support me and that hold me accountable no matter what my issues are. And that's what you need too. So, there is hope, strength, and recovery out there, and there are lots of opportunities to learn more about recovery through your bibliotherapy, through this show, and through the CSATs that you work with. And, you know, if you just don't think you can do it by yourself, it may be time to consider a residential treatment program where you can get some intensive help. You know, Dr. Carnes works at General Path at the Meadows. He actually helped to found that. It's a proven, task-centered approach to long-term sexual addiction recovery. And he is a senior fellow at the Meadows, and the Meadows is in Wickerburg, Arizona. And it's one of the finest treatment centers in the world. It allows you to learn about all types of addictions. And, you know, that's what we're finding more and more and more. You've heard me talk about the fact that when I wanted to educate addiction hospitals about sexual addiction, they were scared to touch it. They were scared to touch it because they feared that it would interfere with their not-for-profit status. So I'm always really amazed that there can be such fear around sexuality. And we've got a lot of things to work on in today's world, and this is certainly one of them. And with the internet being the new crack cocaine of sex addiction, we have to stay on top of it. So, again, I am thrilled to be interviewing Dr. Patrick Carnes tonight.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people. Every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
All right. Carol Jorgensen-Sheets here, and we're just waiting for Dr. Patrick Carnes to call in the radio show. The number he can call is 646-595-3284. You know, this is a field that has gone through so many changes. And it's important for us to recognize and honor the changes that it's been through. It is, you know, it started out so dark. People didn't believe that it was an issue. And I'm pleased to tell you that it has made so much progress. You know, Dr. Carnes had to go through so much to get the word out, and he was stigmatized as a result, kind of blackballed. People thought it was just boys being boys. They didn't get the compulsivity and the obsessiveness behind it. And now people are clamoring to figure out what to do. And that is so hard to watch people who need it so badly to get the help. And at the same time, really, they're in that kind of a place where there's stigma and shame, and they have to know it's safe. Do you feel like you can get the help that you need? That is so important. And that's what this show's all about. It's to remind you that, yes, you can. You can get the help as long as you reach out and request it. You know, I think that it's very, very difficult to make that first call. And when you do, what you're going to meet on the other end of that line is somebody who's caring, who wants to help, and who has expertise to do so. And if you're a partner, I know that it's really tough for you too, because what we know to be true is while the addicts carry the shame, so oftentimes the partner carries the blame. You know, they wonder, was it something that I did? And if they don't carry the blame, you know what? They carry the pain. They don't know whether to stay or to leave. They don't know if it'll get better. And that in and of itself is very tough, because those are the kinds of questions they're asking themselves for themselves and their family. So, I oftentimes work with partners to create connections with other 12-step groups, Essanon, COSA, even have an Indianapolis group that has started to provide support on a smaller level, because they really know how imperative it is to be able to talk out their issues and not reinvent the wheel, brainstorm with each other. So we're always working with partners to develop the kind of support that an addict needs too. And you know, because you've listened to this show, there are certain boundaries that you have to begin to set not only that container for safety in regards to your own self and in regards to members of your family. And those boundaries can improve self-esteem. They can give you a sense of confidence, a sense of direction, a sense of connectedness. Very important. So I can't qualify enough how important support and connection is. And that's what this program is all about. You've heard me say in the past that there are basically two reasons for addiction. One is trauma-based, or neglect, abuse, that kind of thing. And the other is it has to do with kind of obsessive-compulsive behaviors that occur as a result of habitual patterns of behavior. We call it ritualization. We call it kind of that sexual addiction cycle that can occur, that can actually keep you in the cycle of your addiction. I remember once talking to an alcoholic, and he said, you know, the number one thing that lights up my brain is when I hear the clanging of ice in a glass. And that gets me salivating about alcohol. And then I combine that with internet porn. And that's my association. Boy, doesn't that make sense? That would be the association. And clearly, what I know to be true is that that can create a lot of self-loathing and hatred, where you just really don't know what direction to turn. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is to think about your recovery. What are you doing that's working in your life? What is making a difference? You know, is it the reading that you're doing? I recommend facing the shadow to every person that I work with. Why is that? Because it's a workbook that deals with the ABCs of sexual addiction. And the more that you look at the problems that it's caused in your life, the consequences, the more you understand that maybe it's not just internet porn, but there's some fantasy, there's some seduction, there is that risk-taking that is imperative to the illness itself, then you can interrupt that at different points. You know, Dr. Carnes talks about a fire drill, having a fire drill ready so that when you begin to feel urges and cravings, you know how to interrupt that pattern immediately. Writing a letter, reminding yourself how much healthier you are because you no longer utilize pornography or prostitution, exhibitionism, that kind of thing, you know. When you've got those things on hand, as well as your fellowship list, so that you can call anybody at any time, you're much more likely to make successful choices. Some people have found that certain medications make a big difference in their urges and cravings. So they combine some pharmacology with utilizing, you know, those healthy outside behaviors like exercise and relationship building and church, and then they go to their 12-step meetings. When somebody's really feeling like they're on some level wavering, you increase your meetings. You spend more time talking to your sponsor. You request face-to-face. You tell yourself, maybe I need an intensive. Maybe I need to go to Survivor's Week and work on the issues of neglect and abuse in my childhood. You know? Other times, you may be a partner and say, you know what? I need to go to a partner trauma workshop so that I can really work with a group of people who are instrumental in knowing how I feel and helping me not to reinvent the wheel, but giving me the support I need to make some changes. You know, maybe you need a separation. Maybe you need a full disclosure. Maybe you're tired of information leaking out over and over and over and over again. You know, you as a partner keep getting re-traumatized and re-traumatized and re-traumatized. You know, one of the things that I do with the many men and women that I work with that are addicts is I ask them to have empathy for what is going on in their life with their partner. It's just not all about them. It's also about how is this affecting your wife or your husband? How is this affecting the kids? How's it affecting your work? That kind of thing. But again, you need to have somebody who really is there for you and understands and won't stigmatize or shame or guilt you. I know when I work with partners, I'm always saying, you know, you get told all the time not to do their inventory, and I know that you don't really want to, but you get in that posture of doing that. And wow, that just doesn't work. And yet, in some ways, it is an unnatural relationship between an addict and the partner once the information has been disclosed and a discovery has occurred. Because usually the addicts I work with, they don't want to just hightail it out of the relationship. They want to make it up to their spouse. They want to work hard on themselves, and they want to right the wrong. And in doing that, the partner can feel very confused and start feeling like that addict owes them. And it puts them in a very uncomfortable situation with a lot of hierarchical needs. And when that occurs, you know, I say in healthy relationships, it's all about compromise and negotiation. That is what you should be doing. Compromising and negotiating. And unfortunately, that can be difficult because truly, the addict is proving to the partner how important it is to make a change, to be in recovery. And so what ends up happening? You know, there's this uneven, inequitable hierarchy going on until things settle and the partner can begin to trust the addict again. Connection, trust, and support. That's what people who are suffering from addiction or partners need to feel safe. You're listening to Strength, Hope, and Recovery. This is Carol the Coach.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
And he said he loves sex. And when he says that, he's talking about compulsive sex. He is not just talking about
hello,
loving being with people. And so Russell figured out that he had a sexual addiction, and we got him to the right place at the right time. Hey, I'm checking in with you. I'm glad you're listening. And I think we've got Dr. Carnes on the phone. Are you on the phone, Dr. Carnes?
Yeah, hold on. Just,
hello?
Hello?
Dr. Carnes, how are you?
Hi there.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. Apparently, the call-in number that I was given was the wrong one, so I'm sorry that I'm late getting to you.
Well, no problem at all. I'm very glad to have you on the show because I've got some important things to check out with you. And, of course, I wanted to talk to you first and foremost about AFAR. Can you tell our listening audience why AFAR is such an important organization and what it's doing for the field of sexual addiction?
Well, there is no other organization that really takes into account all the addictions. I mean, there are things around some of the chemical addictions, but there isn't anything that also takes into account what we call the process addictions, like compulsive eating or compulsive sex, or some of the things that that don't involve chemicals. And AFAR is committed to fostering research across all the various types of addiction that there is.
All right, so this in some way compartmentalizes your process addictions from chemical addictions and will help people to understand through research that this is just as devastating and compulsive as your chemical addictions.
Well, in fact, from a neurobiology point of view, this is something that, from a medical point of view, has been in the works for a long time. People have understood that the reward centers of the brain can be accessed in many ways besides chemicals. And with both food and sex, for example, they actually are in some ways harder wired in the brain because they are connected with survival. And the reality is that we are now within food and sex. The reality, we can see this in brain scans that are coming in, documenting that the same parts of the brain are affected that as cocaine or other chemicals would affect them. And in some ways, like for example, in the case of sex, the brain will categorize something sexual for both men and women 20% faster than anything else that it is presented with. So the reality is that physicians are saying and writing about, well, of course sex can be addictive. And, of course, now it is delivered in ways that we never knew before. Because the internet has really opened technology to flooding the brain and the reward centers of the brain in ways that the human race has never faced before. So we have a greater challenge than we know. About six, 7 years ago, there was an article in Pediatrics talking about the fact that 2/3 of our junior high students are doing sexual things while they do their homework, and 34% will go on to have a lifelong problem. That period in an adolescent's life between the ages of 12 and 16 is very powerful in terms of forming addictions that are, like if you smoke at the age of 13 or 14, or if you drink alcohol at the age of 13 or 14, can be a real problem. Well, one of the things that we're starting to understand is those kids who, and roughly that's about 6 million U.S. teenagers at this point in time, 40% of those kids who are having the problem started when they actually were 10. And the fact of the matter is that there are parents out there oblivious to the fact that they literally do not know what their kids are doing or that a kid would even be having a problem. And so one of the things that AFAR is trying to do is mobilize both the recovering community as well as the research community and public health people to become aware that we have a major problem. Addiction is our number one public health problem. And in chemicals alone, there's over $500 billion a year in medical expenses connected with the chemical addictions. While you fold in the eating disorders and compulsive overeating, for example, with 1/3 of our adults having obesity, which leads to diabetes and cardiovascular problems, et cetera. And then you fold in sex addiction and you start getting into sexually transmitted diseases AIDS, and in fact, a recent statistic is that now we have the leading cause of throat cancer, which used to be either alcohol or nicotine. The leading cause of throat cancer now is HPV, the virus that is transmitted by oral sex in adolescents, and it's reduced the age of onset from the early 50s to the mid-30s. So it's starting to see that we have major consequences, major things that are happening in our culture, and people are oblivious to it. And Safar's mission to help people understand that we have, we as a nation, have a huge addiction problem. We are one of the most expensive medical systems in the world, and we are one of not one of the healthiest nations in the world.
Well, that makes total sense. And so, in some ways, it's going to have to hit a physical realm for people to grasp how this addiction is affecting our kids, our families, and certainly our adults. Tell me, what is the greatest change you've seen in the past 40 years in your work with sexual addiction? Actually, has it been 40 or is it 50 now? I mean, wasn't it mid-80s that you first started this work?
I actually started the book that kind of started it all for me and my career was Out of the Shadows, and I actually wrote the majority of that in 1972.
But really?
We did not publish it until 1983, because at that time we're still learning to talk about any non-chemical addiction was a real problem, and so what we did in 1985 is we started off really researching, and we followed 1,000 families for 7 years, and what we found, we were able to document that there was a process that had probably an age-old process in that sex addiction comes from certain kinds of families. It usually involved things that were childhood abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. We knew that it was very stress and trauma-related. We knew that it was also early sexual experiences could have a tremendous impact on it. And that it also traveled with other addictions. So we had kind of a pathway. And if you were to ask me, the biggest change is when that has happened in my career is I thought by 1991 that we had the map of how all this happened and could really, and we did. At that time, we had a really good picture and really good numbers about how sex addiction occurred.
Before the internet, right?
That was before the internet.
Uh-huh.
Then we started getting people. I was getting patients who didn't fit that pattern. What did happen is they got on the internet, and as we have since learned from a number of different sources, there are people who now struggle with the problem who never would have had it not been for the internet. And so reality is that I watched, first of all, I would have people tell me that, and one of my clues was that they would say that it happened so fast. I remember having a minister tell me that, you know, he started, he discovered the internet and his church was working alone one day on a holiday, and he quickly went through his family savings, then he embezzled from the church. And he said, it happened so fast. Well, that's what I would hear cocaine addicts would tell me about how fast it happened. And then we started getting people who not only would tell that story, but they would tell me, and this is in the later 90s, that had that problem since they had been on the internet as kids. And now they're in their 20s and they're telling us that they've gotten into trouble for something that they've done. And so now we started seeing the history of that. And now I would say today, anybody who treats sex addiction, sooner or later, most of them, very rare now that we see a sex addict who doesn't have also some issue also with the internet, because the internet is such an easy form for access. So it's really changed things. I mean, I thought, to be truthful, And I think you've heard me say this, Carol. I thought that we had the answers in the 90s and that we had done all this research and found what the path was. Well, that path was accurate up until that time. The path is now different, and there are many different ways that people can get there.
Well, I so agree with you, and certainly we're now learning how to be neuroscientists and brain scientists because we have to do brain work to help people recover. And you and I both know how much we're learning about that every single day.
Well, and in fact, one of the things that I think it's important, obviously, for a basis of recovery, and I think that one of the things that we know is that the 12 steps had a formula that worked, and now we're starting to make sense of why. So, for example, one of the ways the brain changes is that the brain needs to feel safe, needs to feel that it has a way of understanding it. In other words, that there's a commonality of story. All of those things that go into a 12-step program from a neuroscience point of view make lots of sense now, but nobody had that idea in the 1930s, and nobody thought about applying it to other things than alcohol. But the reality is that system worked, and the truth is, whether you're in recovery or not in recovery, I think that brain consciousness now is something that everybody has to start learning about. It's not just that professionals need to become aware of the way the brain changes, but all of us need to become good consumers of information about how to take care of our brain. And you know, how to feed it better, how to stimulate it, how to keep it going, and
how to rest it.
Yeah, well, the brain replaces itself every 2 years, like our blood supply is replaced every 6 months. The brain actually reconstitutes itself and is very, very plastic. And so part of what we have to do is be aware of what are the things that we can do to help our brain consolidate, learn new things, be stimulated, and to grow new ways of behaving and thinking, which bring our brain to a new level of functioning. And that actually begins or goes well into what many people would consider elderly. The truth is that the brain actually reaches kind of an epitome in the mid-60s. I think there may be listeners who, as they get older, would forget things like go into a room, forget why you went there, or forget names and things that they're familiar with and what have you, and can't recall them. Well, fact is the brain gets very complex, and so the brain is able to handle a lot of variables as you age, and some of times of where you've been stuff is forgotten. Well, I think for a lot of people, who if they worry about maybe their brain is deteriorating, but in fact, our brains really keep maturing, and we're learning over the lifespan that it's a task that all of us can learn from. So there's good books out there that can help with that, but for sure, what people need to understand is that addiction is a brain disease. In other words, that it's a problem that has where the brain doesn't function like it's supposed to. And when we think of Alzheimer's, people understand Alzheimer's and nod their heads, and they think, well, what happens when somebody has Alzheimer's? Well, they have trouble with their memory. They have trouble with feelings. They have trouble managing their feelings. They lose contact with reality. That's a brain disease. Well, that's also true of what happens for addicts is they start to lose contact with reality. They start making bad decisions. They have a hard time managing their feelings. They have difficulty with being in touch with what's going on around them. So The fact of the matter is that brain, that addiction is very much a brain problem, and as opposed to a moral one, which is of course something that many people were judged by. I think, and when I started my career, that's the other thing that I would say was one of the major changes. And the change is that one of the reasons we didn't publish Out of the Shadows and it took so long was because of just the fear, and you know, we were teaching other professionals and talking about it and what have you, but aware of what the public reaction would be to the idea of sex addiction. And today it's a pretty common understood concept, and in some countries have been very notable in pioneering the public's understanding of that. For example, in Canada, in the province of Alberta, they did a public education thing, much like you do, Carol, where you're trying to help the public understand that there's a problem. And they really brought in experts and told the story and what have you. And it appeared on all their TV channels and health channels and hospitals and subways and what have you. And then they tested out where the average citizen, what they thought about addiction. And then 2 years later, they did an assessment. And what they found is they totally changed the culture's perception about the nature of addictions. And when Albertans were asked, well, now that you understand this, what treatments do you think that we need the most help with? And the number one thing they were requesting is more services for sex addiction.
That is amazing. I had no idea. So would you say that their treatment centers and their workshops and their experts, that is actually more available to the public?
Well, that's they, in fact, have put the whole system, starting with medical schools and hospitals and delivery systems. The healthcare system in Canada is very different from ours. So it really required very different thinking in order to understand what it was going to take in order to build a system that would really deal with addiction as a problem. But they took a giant step by educating their public. And it's interesting, the people they brought in were from American institutions, and it was headed by a Washington think tank that helped them design the whole process. So they used American technology to help them with their problem, and which we haven't even accessed in our own country.
Well, and I was going to ask you, did they ask you to be part of the think tank?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was numbers of us that were involved in the education, and but they were from all kinds of addiction institutions and academic institutions in the U.S. There's a lot of common agreement amongst professionals and people who work both in the addiction community and the brain community about this as a problem. And actually, Europe has been, in some ways, further ahead than we are in some of the neuroscience studies. So, for example, out of Cambridge, we've been getting studies of what pornography can do to the brain. And so one of them, for example, really opened our eyes to the fact that 4 hours of internet pornography a week will actually decrease gray matter volume, affect the decision-making of forebrains, and would also affect the bottom of the brain where you have feelings and learning and motivation. All those things were affected. And one of the most interesting side effects is that it affected the ability to be sexual with another human being. So, for example, erectile dysfunction was one of the common side effects. And that's what 4 hours would do for you. And so the whole idea was to understand that it was something that seemed so innocent, or it seemed so like that wouldn't have an impact. The stimulation the brain was receiving was so great, it actually altered how the brain was functioning. I think it was really eye-opening to a lot of people. But now there are studies. There's one from Germany and the University of Berlin. So that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association. In other words, more and more evidence is coming in about the impact of it, and it's being understood worldwide.
Yes, That is absolutely amazing. And when you think that the average male describes that he watches at least 4 hours of porn a week, you're saying that decreases the gray matter, which then affects the ability to process feelings and learning and to be motivated,
right.
And then the physiological, erectile dysfunction, sexual anorexia. I mean, it just goes, it just triples down and ripples out. And so we have a whole lot more to do to educate the public about how notorious this situation is. What are you doing right now? Because I know that I was reading a McGinnis interview, and you said probably, oh, maybe it was 4 or 5 years ago, that your proudest book thus far was The Recovery Zone. So what are you doing these days? And, you know, I know you're running a circuit where you're really helping to connect people to the 12 steps. Tell us a little bit about how you're doing and what you're doing.
Well, the 12-step part is that in the late 80s, we put a book out called The Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps, and it was a way of structuring how you worked and kind of started thinking differently in a more psychological or self-aware way about doing step work. And that, in fact, when I proposed that book to the publisher, they said it was a book that was never going to sell, but they thought that a tape set would, and they would include it as a book to go along with the tape set. And 6 months after it appeared, people weren't buying the tapes, they were buying the book. So the Gentle Path book is a book that grew in the 12-step community. It was used in Debtors Anonymous and Codependents Anonymous, adult children of alcoholics, a wide variety of different fellowships were using it. And as I reflect upon it over the years, the fact is that once somebody starts this, they realize they probably qualify for more than one fellowship. And the fact is that as you get further along in the process, you realize that there are basic things that you have to do that kind of transcends everything. So the idea was that to help people think about this, if you're living this way, this discipline across these 12 steps, some certain principles appear that become very, very important. And so we now have...
Honesty, courage, and those kind of principles.
Pardon?
Honesty and courage.
Right. And so it's called a Gentle Path Through the 12 Principles. Well, we've started now doing retreats around that, and Afar has been very instrumental in helping people starting to think about that. And the book is... been a springboard to a lot of thought across the fellowships. And so that's what I really hope happens with that is that no disease entity ever got what it needed until people who had the problem stood up and said, we need to do something. I mean, it's true of diabetes, it's cancer, multiple sclerosis, AIDS. And the fact is that the people who had the problem and their families needed to stand up and do this. And the fact is that addiction is a problem that there's still so much shame attached that people who have the problem don't stand up. And part of that is because there's confusion about really what is anonymity. The truth is that AA would never have gotten off the ground if it wasn't for the Saturday Evening Post and Reader's Digest and other places in which alcoholics spoke out about the power of what can happen in the healing and recovery. And the fact of the matter is that we have this huge problem, and we have people in all these different fellowships who have a common bond in that they've been helped in this issue. And they need to become educated and be able to speak out. And my hope is, as they get more familiar with the principles, they would be people who would then be able to stand along with the research people in Afar and the various people who from both the science and the clinical communities and what have you. It needs to be a recovery-driven thing where recovering people are speaking up. And so my hope is that book stimulates that kind of leadership and that kind of speaking out.
And so if people want to attend the 12 principles workshops, because I read where you can really join in at any point. You don't have to start at the beginning. You can come to the one that's, what, June 4th through the 6th?
Yep, there's one going to be, the next one is June 7th, I think, and
okay.
5 through 7, and it's going to be in Scottsdale, and people are welcome, and they can find out about that by going to the AFARA website, or they can go to the, it's also 12principles.com has information about it.
Got it. Well, I so appreciate your time, and, you know, I know that I get three very common questions, and one of them is, what recovery tools do you think are the most important to integrate when working on sexual recovery? And, of course, my answer is all of them. You know, you need a committee. You need a committee of people. You need a committee of tools and resources. And I know that you've been a proponent of certified sexual addictions therapists in addition to 12-step recovery because it advocates for that spiritual transformation. Is there anything
Well, I think
you would
the part
add?
Of the reason for that is that of all the things that can that you can struggle with, you know, sex has so much shame attached to it in our culture. And the fact is that the recovery can be very difficult. All addictions are difficult. And it's a little bit like Viktor Frankl talked about when the people who made it through the concentration camps. And he said it's basically it, the people who were able to make the transformation were literally they were transforming suffering into meaning. And what I think that anybody who works with a disease like this and you have the suffering, it brings you to this place where sooner or later you do the hard work, you face the hard things because you realize it matters. It matters to loved ones. It matters to having a different life. It matters to your kids. I mean, it just has to matter. And that basically is in the realm of spirituality.
And that goes beyond confirmation. That is in transformation. And I read somewhere that you felt like steps 6 and 7 were the most important. Do you remember what you quoted as being the most important steps?
Well, I think it's hazardous for anyone to say that. What I was intending was just to say that people do a first step and they sometimes think that that's all that they have to do. And the truth is, each step brings you down into a deeper level. And the truth is that the real core pivotal places in the 12 steps is the realization is that making the commitment to being a better human being is an ongoing process. The fact that you're getting healthier doesn't mean that you aren't going to have challenges or further crisis or further learnings. I'm going to be 71 in a few weeks, and the reality is I'm still having to work as hard on myself as I going back to the beginning when I started therapy, I mean, the reality is that becomes a lifelong thing that you have to start really realizing is that it's something that doesn't end. It's a process that keeps on calling you. And the 6 and 7 steps really kind of are the core of that basic proposition.
Well, and I did not propose that, but I thought I read that. You know, it's the same thing as I heard you say, and it's certainly in your tapes, that you have to be able to call on your committee if you're going to stay in recovery. You can't do it by yourself. You can't white-knuckle it.
Mm-hmm.
That you need that support to create that transformation. So, yeah, people can be sober, but they're not going to be recovered. And I don't know about you, but reframing and when suffering has meaning, it becomes exciting. And that's what I want to share with the listeners, that it is about hope, strength, and recovery. And it's about really giving back at the end once you get it. And, you know, Dr. Carnes, you have given back and back and back. You're an amazing individual.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about it a lot lately because for a variety of reasons, but one thing that was a very interesting piece of federal research that was done on the 12 steps, and they found that one of the best predictors of success was not that you had sponsors, but the fact that you became a sponsor.
Huh.
And I've had a chance to think about that because I when I teach, I often have made it kind of a where I would create gifts for my students. And mm-hmm. because when what I've always learned is that sometimes you teach about that which you need to work on yourself. And
mm-hmm.
I learn as much, whether it be in an educational setting or in a therapy session, in many ways. I think I learn more than the patient or the student does. And I think the giving back thing was one of the secrets that Bill W. and Dr. Bob got. And really, they got that out of a letter that Carl Jung wrote to them about that in order for them to really make a difference, they had to be able to pass it on. And I think in many ways that is one of the secrets, is that it isn't just that you got help, but that you also help. And it's a basic act of gratitude. That gratitude becomes an issue or a way of reframing then, you know, what your whole life is about.
Well, you know, Marcy Shimroff, who wrote the book on happiness, said, truly, to find meaning in life, they interviewed 20,000 people, and they found that if you stayed in the moment, if you had gratitude, and if you reframed so that you were always asking yourself, what did I have to learn, and what wisdom have I gained from whatever experience I've had, that kept you stable, and that kept you giving back. And you know, that book has been instrumental for me. You know, I'm a coach, and so I really believe in coaching people once they get out of the crisis, stabilize their life, and are searching for that meaning. So I'm glad to hear you say that you feel the same when it comes to reframing and looking at suffering and realizing that it has a wonderful end game, and that is the transformation of giving back.
Well, the number one resilient skill I think that a person can evolve is to keep that focus on your gratitude. It takes a real discipline to do that, but that gratitude list really makes a difference. There's no doubt about it.
Well, that's a perfect place for me to end and just say I am so grateful that you found the number, that you got the right number, that you came on the
show.
Took some
doing, but we got there.
I know, and truly, you are the master of sexual addiction. You know, I remember you telling our class that for so many years, you were such a pioneer, and that people stigmatized you for it. And truly, I hope that you're seeing full circle, that we are a community that love you, that appreciate you, and our listening audience was clamoring to have me get you on the show. So thank you so much. Lots of gratitude to you for being on the show. And we're going to give back by creating that ebook and having our listeners buy it so that they learn more from our guests and they can read the transcripts and also donate to AFAR all at the same time.
That'll be great. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you at the next conference.
Okay. Thanks, girl.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay, that was Dr. Patrick Carnes, obviously a mentor and a half. I just can't speak highly enough about him. When I did coaching, I had people that asked me, what are you going to do next, Carol? And I said, I'm going to learn about sexual addiction and provide services to those people who have sexual addictions and who also are in love with sex addicts. And the general population said, dear gosh, Carol, why would you do that? You know, here you're working on coaching. You're taking people to their highest potential. What would compel you to want to work in that field? And it's what Dr. Carnes said today, you know, that there's a lot of suffering in that field, but out of suffering comes growth. And my clients are the wisest, the strongest and the most compassionate, because they've been through so much trauma, so much effort, so much work. And I appreciate all my listeners out there that consistently listen to the show and want to learn more about this disorder and, more importantly, about that recovery movement that's so imperative to taking your life to the next level. So as I end the show, I will tell you, there will only be one of you at all times. I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. Keep working, working on your recovery, and being the best person that you can be. And again, thank you to Dr. Patrick Carnes, who has the Gentle Path program at the Meadows, which is a confidential inpatient treatment center for men 18 and older who battle sexual addiction, relationship addiction, and sexual anorexia. It was a pleasure to get to speak to him tonight. Okay, we'll see you next week. And as I always say, have a good one.